bird lovers all, to celebrate the primal feast of the dawn and the song. And we'll be joining our broadcasting colleagues in India, Poland, Finland, Germany, Spain and Ireland to hear the very best avian voices on the planet, from peacocks to capercaillies, corncrakes to nightingales. And with me throughout the night to help is a singer and bird enthusiast, Will Young. So, Will, what are you expecting to hear?
I love capercaillies, by the way.
Good.
Well, I've already heard the moorhens, so that's fun. Canada geese were going off earlier, weren't they?
Yeah, we had actually a reed warbler, yeah.
Yeah, and but I'm looking forward to the surprising. I don't know what it will be next, but I think you're going to tell me.
Thank you very much, Darren. So, actually, Will, it sounds like it's going to be a very peaceful, tranquil and calm night, which is just what we want to hear birds sound. You've heard a bittern, so we sort of jumped ahead a little bit there, didn't we? But is there anything else you're particularly looking forward to hearing?
The cuckoo. I just love the sound of the cuckoo. And I'd like to hear a barn owl as well.
Ooh, that's asking a bit.
Is that asking
a bit? That's asking a bit. We never know. We might get a screeching barn owl as well, if we're very lucky. We might get tawny owls as well. We would expect those. But
out the marsh harriers, but they won't be.
Well, that marsh harriers don't make a lot of sound. So what we're concentrating on at the moment, of course, is pitch darkness. Because we should say we're on this peninsula. We are almost surrounded by water. Beyond us is reeds as well. We're in a little grove of birch and willow trees. It's really quite pleasant here, isn't it? But there's definitely a sense of isolation, of being way out in the middle of a landscape which
Bitten again.
Bitten. Oh, I don't know whether anybody caught that, but that was a bitten booming as well.
Silence is amazing. I mean, it really is, you know, having come from a metropolis, it's wonderful. It's the perfect place to hear things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you've got to concentrate sometimes. What we're going to get, I think, at this particular time, is sporadic bird sounds. It won't always be a full-throated cacophony or anything like that. We're going to get birds gradually drip-feeding their way into the into our consciousness. So we will stop, we promise, if we do hear bitterns. The trouble is with bitterns, by the time you've heard them, they've stopped, haven't they? It's very frustrating. I suppose what we ought to really do is explain what the dawn chorus is all about, why the birds treat us as such an extraordinary sound.
Well, we've got these, as you said, erudite experts here. So to help us with the basics, Jenny York, a zoologist from Cambridge and Cambridge University, and Mark Cocker, author of Birds Britannica and Crow Country. Mark, how good is Britain for birds, and how do we compare with our European neighbours?
Well, we love our birds, but we don't have a truly exceptional diversity. Somewhere like Ecuador maybe has 1,800 species. We have about 220 breeding birds, but of those, perhaps 60 are passerines and perform and produce sounds at dawn. So we have a very good dawn chorus, and anyone who lives, even in the centre of London, you will have little bits of dawn chorus, but anybody who lives in the suburbia and in most cities, and certainly in the countryside, we have a really excellent dawn chorus.
And for an amateur like me, could you explain what the dawn chorus actually is?
Well, it's an interesting... It's a generalisation, truthfully. It starts before dawn. We're all here at 12:30 at night, and some birds sing in the night time, but it starts pre-dawn. Essentially, it's a pre-dawn sound that begins before the sun comes up, and it's a moment of intensification in the song that birds produce throughout the day. So at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll hear birds, but there's just this outpouring, this great efflorescence of sound by the birds as the light arrives. And we should not only sort of... we see it in a particular way, that it is both a reflection of sunlight. So it starts with the appearance of the sun. It is sunlight, because through photosynthesis, the sun produces all the foliage of spring. The insects eat all this protoplasm of the green stuff above us. And then the birds convert that into muscle and energy, which they then reproduce as sound. So it is truthfully the sunlight made into music. And it's a fantastic ritualized part of life in the temperate world.
Mark, and,
Mark, that is the most wonderful description I have. I mean, I'm absolutely speechless. I mean, my God, it's like listening to Yeats or something. Jenny, the suggestion seems to be that maybe it's just the males that sing, and you dispute this.
So I think probably traditionally birdsong is thought of as something that males do to attract mates and defend their territories, but increasingly we're becoming more aware that actually the majority of females are in different species of songbirds are singing too. So over 70% of songbird species, females also produce song. And even our sort of backyard robin redbreast is a character. You'll see the females will produce song in the winter months and defend their territory. But then when it comes towards spring, they give up their territories and join the male, pair up with the male and stop singing.
Can you tell the difference between a male and a female? Sound?
By sound? No.
Even they can't tell the difference.
Really?
Males and females can't tell each other apart.
Gosh. And you've studied birds in other countries, both of you. Jenny, is this a global phenomenon?
So the dawn chorus, very much so, is occurring around the world, and hopefully we'll hear some more of it in other places later on. But it varies a lot across the world. So we're very privileged to have a particularly intense dawn chorus here in the temperate zone because we have an influx.
There's a tawny owl calling, by the way. Sorry to interrupt.
My favourite bird, got to be really.
Tawny owl, hang on.
Yeah, we go.
That was a male. Whether you caught it, we'll stop if we hear it again. That was a male tawny owl hooting, wasn't it? Here we go, hang on. Shakespeare got it wrong, didn't he? To wit, to woo a merry note. In which, of course, it's the male and the female. That was a male tawny owl hooting, and the female makes the kwik sound.
Well, exactly, but it took years to figure that one out, didn't it?
Don't go away. We're going to come back to you both, so thank you very much for that. But I think somewhere out there among the reeds, among those million reed stems, is Will Young. Are you there, Will?
Brett, I'm out here, and I have to say, I've just got very excited, not that I wasn't excited already, because the bittern is just the most unbelievable sound I've ever heard. It's like when percussionists have this wonderful percussionist, Danny Cummings, and when he plays his, I don't know what they are, bongos or something, and they lick their finger and they run it over the top, and because they're so long, the drums, the sound reverberates. But we're talking a drum that is 3 feet high, and this bird's certainly not that, and the sound is sonically unbelievable. I just couldn't believe it. I thought that the mics were up and someone was playing it through my headphones, but no. I mean, this is really exciting. I'm going to explain where I am. I'm standing, I don't know where I am actually, Brett, to be honest, but it's somewhere near the M5. But I'm out in the nature park with Tristan Gooley, and he's written loads of best-selling books about the art of natural navigation. Tristan, how do you define that?
Hi, Will. Natural navigation is the beautiful art of finding our way using nature. We can use the sun, moon, stars, wind, weather, plants and animals.
That's amazing. I mean, I can't use my sat nav, so that's that worries me. So as we stand here now, what can you tell me immediately about the surrounding area just by the sounds, everything you said just then?
Well, we're picking up some wonderful bird sounds, and every bird, every animal, there's a tawny owl in the background there, is giving us some clue to our landscape because they all have their chosen habitats. So if we think of the bitterns that we've heard, then there must be reeds here. We know that already, but once we start adding all the small pieces together, we get a very rich map of where we're standing.
So if we turn, I've got my head torch on. If we turned our torches off and just made our way in the dark, I'm worried about this, but I've been told to do it. Just tell me what we're hearing, I guess, because you can't see very well.
If we just listen to the grass under our feet, we know we're in a wetlands area, so one of our challenges is, in the dark, is to not fall into the water. But nature is going to give us a lot of help here, because every single plant is telling us how wet things are. So if we step in here, can you hear that light crunching? That is a soft rush, and that's what I use to warn me that I'm about to get wet if I don't slow down.
So it's a very different sound, isn't it? So we moved from shorter grass into these... that crunching sound, as you said.
Yeah, in the daytime you can spot them. Everybody can do this. You can spot these clumps of dark rush in a field, and go and try it. It's where your feet will go squelch. But we're in the dark here, so we can use sounds to do the same thing.
And do you often have occasions when you are walking in the dark? You know, you're using natural light at night.
Yes, yeah. You have to let your eyes adjust, of course. It can take 25 minutes or half an hour, and then we have to be really careful, because we'll lose our night vision in just a few seconds of bright light.
And so are there things... We've just stepped over that rather precarious edge of the pathway. I'm glad neither of us tripped up. And are there other things that you can tell geniuses? And I'm standing here looking up, and I know we're going to talk about it later, the sky. But the clouds... Well, I mean, it was quite overcast earlier. It's damp underfoot, but that's... That's the dew. And now we've got this beautiful, I mean, it looks almost like a full moon to me. Beautiful clear sky.
So it's a three-quarter moon out there, and it's having quite an influence on the life around us, although we don't always detect that, because hunters, you know, like owls, find it easier with a bit of moonlight, but their prey know that. So rodents, for example, will forage less, and they'll go less far from cover when there's a lot of moonlight. And when there's a lot of moonlight, we're all, I think, used to sort of hearing a bit more from the owls. So there's this sort of this tussle going on. It gets a bit easier for the hunters with a bit of light, but the prey, they're a bit canny and they hide more.
So I guess also it's easier to get around when... I mean, it really is bright, the moon. I mean, I've got this head torch on. I do look a bit like a miner, and I'm worried I'm blinding you, actually, every time I look at you. But, it really is pretty bright, so it's easier to get around.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's one of the... You know, if you get into your night walking, you do start to think a bit like these animals. You start to realise that some nights it's you know, it's easy going, and other nights, you know, you're going to struggle.
Must be the most wonderful, peaceful thing, as I am already experiencing it here, to go night walking.
It's a joy.
Wow. Do you go swimming as well? Have you ever done that? I want to do that. Not tonight, by the way, can I just add. I think it might be a little bit cold. Well, we're going to carry on walking down here, being careful not to slip up, and hopefully we can hear some more sounds. Actually, if we stop for a second, let's see if there's anything up on any of the mics. That's really quiet, actually.
Hello, Will. Can you hear me?
What was that? Oh, we've got a Brett.
Yes, you have, yes.
We've got a Brett.
That sounded fantastic, that did. It's interesting hearing the birds singing under that moon. We've heard reed warblers, but we've also heard the occasional very loud, rather interruptive belch of a moorhen. They do break into conversations, don't they? Those were these sudden squawks that you get from the middle of the reeds. They always take me a little bit by surprise.
Now, are you talking to me?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking to someone else, because I can't see you. Well, it could have been my supper going down, but I think I'm suitably far away. I have to say, and I sounded slightly distracted, because my head torch has alighted on a beautiful open yellow iris that is so stunning. And I think that's the thing about this this reserve, is actually the geometry of all the plants, you know, the sharpness of the reeds, the way they're silhouetted against the moonlight, then, as you say, these sort of the belching of the moorhens as they come through, and it really is the most serene theatrical place, actually. And
that's a good word. Thank you, Will. We'll come talk to you again soon, I think, because we're going to absorb some of the atmosphere, and hopefully we'll be able to go across to Derek Mooney and RTE again very soon. what we do, we're just listening now to a growing chorus of rather distant reed warblers. They're in the background here at Ham Wall. And it's interesting, I suppose that they're singing because they want to attract female reed warblers in, which are migrating by night. But certainly, you know, we're just after 2 a.m. and there are reed warblers singing quite loudly. And those are mallards. Yeah, those are mallards in the background. There's a lot of ducks here out amongst the reeds. So with those mallards, I think we can actually cross now to Derek Mooney and his team at RTE.
Thank you very much indeed, Cathy. Welcome back. Welcome back. You haven't been anywhere. You've been listening in, more than likely. So hello and good morning, and wherever you're listening to this, around Europe, around the world, if it's been listening on one of the streams by one of the other national broadcasting services, if you're listening to RTE.ie. In fact, earlier I was listening on RTE.ie on the player, and I have to say the sounds from India were just wonderful. They were great fun. They were exotic. They were just something spectacular. And we've had Finland. And who else have we had? We've had the corncrake and carrickfin in the very early hours of the morning. What else did we have? Does anybody...
Spain?
We had Spain. The sounds from
Spain
were... The Netherlands were amazing. Oh, it's just terrific. And now we're going to Austria. And we're going to talk to Leander Kiel. Hello, Leander.
Hi there. We're just listening to a nightingale here. I've been tracing this bird. Let's listen to it a little bit.
I wonder how many bitterns there are out there, Mark.
No idea.
There's quite a lot, aren't there? I mean, we were assuming it's the same bird, but it might be one male calling to another. It is the males, isn't it? It's not the females.
It's just the males.
Just the males.
Yeah.
And how? Well, they'll have several. They might have more than one partner.
They can do, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting hearing the cuckoo for the first time.
Yeah.
We just
yeah,
heard one cuckoo call. I think that's our hint. That's the harbinger of the dawn, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's, what, 12 minutes past four now. Should be beginning to see light. I think it's about 5:30, isn't it, that dawn actually breaks here. But I wonder if it's Paul Farley around, our poet. He's looming out of the shadows. Paul is... I can sort of see a distant shape down the boardwalk.
Step forward. Has anyone
moved? Can we just listen for a few minutes?
I was just going to say, Brett, we've been waiting for this since 12:30. This is the dawn chorus.
So can you tease out, Mark, some of the things, the main features that we're hearing?
Yeah. Well, one of the most dramatic sounds we can hear is the wren, which is behind us. The main bulk of the sound is blackbirds in the foreground and then reed warblers in the more distant.
There's a good bitten bass line as well still.
I think it is its choral quality. You know, I think trying to separate it out is wonderful, and and clever, etc. But it is just the sheer, the bulk of it, isn't it, Will?
Well, it's reminding me of, you know that sound when an orchestra warms up before they all start playing in unison?
Yeah.
Except it's been sort of inverted a bit, so it's sort of in tune and out of tune. And it's the most glorious, joyous experience, yeah, hearing it now.
Absolutely. I think the two things there. First of all, the orchestra before the playing of the orchestra before the concert is out of tune, but and it is like that in its unstructured nature, but actually it sounds formally constructed, doesn't it?
Yes, and I'm wondering if that is because in its entirety it's part of nature.
Dawn Chorus is now developing, here at Hamwall, is now developing so many layers and textures. We're getting new birds joining all the time. There's a lovely background chorus of wood pigeons which are coming in. My toe bleeds, Mary, my toe bleeds, Mary. How I always remember wood pigeon song. There's a great tits metallic song just over here. There's a bittern booming in the background. Reed warblers, innumerable reed warblers, countless reed warblers stretching way, way back into the distance, because now I can see the reed beds in all their entirety, and behind me is a channel with coots swimming on it, and beyond, reed beds. Magpie's just flown over, and just arrived as well is writer Adam Nicholson, writer on all things environmental. Adam, the Dawn. And we're listening to the Dawn Chorus, which is now building up to a terrific crescendo. We began at 12:30 this morning, and we were joined from India, from Ireland. We've heard corncrakes in Ireland, flamingos in Spain. We've talked about ospreys, red kites. We've been serenaded by throngs of reed warblers in the reeds behind, and now we're getting the full benefit of the Dawn Chorus on International Dawn Chorus Day at its very, very best. It is an extraordinary experience. Now, to share it, I have Alexandra, Alex Harris, who is a writer and a lecturer as well in all things to do with the literature of not just the dawn, but also of landscapes and the open air. Now, we've been hearing from you so far, Alex, looking at different aspects of darkness, dawn breaking as well, and how we feel and how people have responded to that. Now the light has gained fully, what are you going to talk about?
Well, my question for this moment in the morning is, what was the dawn like in paradise? And perhaps it was rather like the dawn we have experienced here in Somerset. But I'm going to turn back to the 1660s and see what John Milton thought it was like in Eden when the sun came up. Adam and Eve have slept very well in Eden. Milton points out that they have perfect digestion, so they're not interrupted by any bodily troubles during the night. And it's also the perfect temperature. Great equilibrium for sleeping. However, Eve's had some troubled dreams. But before the two first human beings go out to start their...
Ha ha ha!
We just had a fly passed by a group of mute swans, but as dawn becomes day, I'd like to thank our guests this morning. That's Will Young, Jimmy Goodwin, Alexandra Harris, Mark Cocker, Jenny York, Paul Farley, Adam Nicholson, Steve Hughes, Tristan Gooley, Hannah Tulicki, Neria Bello and Lucy Duncombe. Radio 4's Dawn Chorus was produced by Alistair Cross and Tim Dee, with help from Siobhan Maguire, Tom Bonnet, Caitlin Hobbs, Sophie Anton, Claire Salisbury and Miles Ward. Our sound engineers were Ian Hunter and Tim Allen. We'd also like to thank Derek Mooney and the team at RTE for putting together this international broadcasting event and asking us to be part of it, and to the RSPB for hosting us here at Ham Wall. But mostly, we'd like to thank the blackcaps, the garden warblers, the reed warblers, the bitterns, the cuckoos and the coots of Ham Wall Nature Reserve, and the glories of the British Spring.